Aloha, it's 4 o'clock. Time now for Out of the Box. You're listening to KKCR Honolulu, KAQA Kilauea, Kauai Community Radio. I'm your host, Dave Giroux. And Jonathan Jay is still over in Europe, and we should be back for the next show here. So we're looking forward to his return here soon. And in the meantime, I'm the host of the show.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
That's right. Okay, well, let's see. We've got a good show lined up for you today. In just a few minutes, we'll be talking with Terry Lilly. He's a biologist and frequent diver of the reefs on the North Shore and has been documenting the degradation of the ecosystem down in the ocean here. So we'll be talking with him in a few minutes. And then in the next hour, we're hoping to get a call from Mason Chalk, who is a county council person and is a candidate for the for re-election on his seat there on the county council. So hopefully he'll be calling in after 5 o'clock, and there'll be plenty of chances for you to call in and ask questions of the guests and just to call in with your own input and information. So first off, let me start off with a little bit of news. Let's see, protests are continuing in Ferguson, Missouri, site of the latest police abuse of power shootings, Michael Brown, last week. Protesters have been active in the area since shooting, demanding justice for Michael Brown and his family and the arrest and conviction of the police officer for the murder of the teenager. Let's see, there's been a kind of interesting interplay of information and disinformation on this issue in the media. There's a video came out showing Michael supposedly robbing a convenience store beforehand, and then they said, oh, the officer was responding to the call for the robbery, and he encountered Michael and thought he was a suspect, but then it turned out later that the police dispatch tape shows there wasn't a call out for the suspect, and the police officer didn't know about the incident, so that was kind of debunked. And then the tape showed that Michael paid for his items at the store and, was having a discussion with somebody in the store. So it was kind of completely, shown out of context. Then they said, oh, Michael had marijuana in his system and kind of made him sound like some drug crazed individual. But, it was kind of misplayed. But then, a couple of interesting things about this whole incident there. One was, the police presence and the military weaponry that they have on the streets of St. Louis there, confronting the protesters. They're there with their full battle gear. They have these mine-resistant, ambush-protected vehicles, machine guns. I mean, it looks like they're on the streets of Baghdad, for that matter. And you're not used to seeing that sort of military presence in the streets of the U.S. In the last few years, the military, and probably because the wars are winding down, hopefully, that the military has been kind of giving this equipment away to law enforcement, little or no cost. And so this has prompted some municipalities and states even to call for the banning of the transfer of military weapons to the police departments. Now, there is a website I found on the Internet here recently that tracks, where this equipment is going. It's actually a government website, but there's this one group that is giving easy access to it. They're at shtfplan.com, and you can look. I looked up the Hawaii entries there, and there's a list of. It only showed Honolulu County, and so it didn't really show, if there anything had been transferred to Kauai at this point. I don't think it has. But anyway, it says that Honolulu recently received 3 of the mine-resistant ambush-protected vehicles. So I'm not sure what the city and county of Honolulu needs with these sort of vehicles. They just think it's cool. They're getting them for free. And, what's the big deal? But, it does kind of bring up some questions as to why they're getting this these kind of equipment and what are they planning on doing with it. Anyway, also in the Ferguson, Missouri protests, there were accounts of agents provocateurs who were throwing bottles and rocks at police, without any response whatsoever, making it really look like you know, they didn't care, and it was kind of a setup, and they're maybe trying to make the protesters look bad. So kind of like what happened in the battle for Seattle. I don't know if you remember that. That's probably been 10 years now, in the World Trade Organization protests back in the day, where they had these anarchists, and they were all dressed in black, and their faces and heads were covered, and they were torching buildings and breaking glass, and then later you see them behind the police lines, you know, joking it up with the police. So they kind of use that as an excuse to come down hard on the protesters. But then another incident here in Ferguson is an information war that's going on. I mean, there's the disinformation of the you know, the videos and things like that come out, but then Anonymous, you know, the hacktivist group, the hacker activist group, who got involved with it. They shut down the county websites there in Ferguson. They released the name of the police officer when the police department refused to do so. And then they released the police dispatch tapes that they got off of the secured website. And so a lot of information got out that, you know, wasn't supposed to be, or the police didn't want released anyway. So then, you know, the police have been telling people, you know, don't use the social media. When you're in emergency situations like this, you got to leave the phone lines, internet channels open for the police to use. The emergency responders need those channels, you know, and so they say don't use public media. You know, I don't know if you remember back in the protests, Arab Spring protests in Egypt a couple of years ago. You know, they're all tweeting their information around of what's going on in the protests, what are the police doing, what is the army doing, where is the next protest going to be, and so now in the U.S. they're telling people don't use social media during these protest situations, emergency situations. You know, it's kind of, you know, clamping down on their freedom of speech there, I think. And then at one point yesterday, they used some sort of device that killed internet and cell phone use in the area. So people were filming, you know, with their cell phones and their iPhones or whatever. And everything went blank for a while. It's kind of like they were testing it or something like that. But, you know, and so this is kind of a new and kind of dangerous development in information management in these protests and emergency situations. You know, as a matter of fact, just today, the California Senate passed a bill to allow the use of internet or cell phone kill switches, supposedly to prevent the use of stolen cell phones, you know. But it could also allow law enforcement to halt communications during protests. So it'd be no filming of the police, no cell phone use, no tweets of what's going on there. So this is kind of a chilling development that can kind of, you know, affect your rights to protest, communicate, and to effectively, you know, protest government actions. So so it's kind of a, you know, we've seen a lot of these protests, a lot of these shootings going on here in the last few years, but this one seems to be playing out a little differently, you know, with use of technology, and it's kind of interesting to watch, although it's kind of scary in some respects. Okay, another story here. This is in the Ukraine. Let's see, the Ukrainian government, the illegal, I would say, government of Ukraine, has stepped up their attacks on the Russian provinces in the eastern part of the country, with a mounting death toll in the civilian population. Several thousands of civilians have been killed, and up to a million refugees have left this area, mostly fleeing into Russia, who have taken care of these people. Many of the Ukrainian army soldiers who are drafted have refused to fight. They leave the country or they just go somewhere else. They refuse to fight. So they've had to import mercenaries from Poland and Hungary to help them with their campaign, I guess. Some people will do it for money when, you know, others refuse to kill their countrymen for other reasons, I guess. There have been a lot of protests in Kiev and surrounding areas. So it kind of seems like the government in Kiev is, you know, the NATO-installed government is kind of on the ropes there and may not last very long here. So that would kind of be a positive development, I think, in that situation. Still no reports here on the findings of the investigation into the downing of the Malaysian airliners MH17 on July 7th. A Dutch team of investigators has left the Ukraine without ever getting access to the wreckage site. Ukrainian government is in control of the site, but they refuse the investigators access to it, saying it's not safe. So, but there was a report that came out by the first person on site, the first official on site, anyway, a representative of the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, OSCE, who said just from his, you know, initial survey of the site, it looked like the plane had been strafed with machine gun fires, all these holes in the side of it, especially around the cockpit area. And so then the Russians released their satellite and radar data indicating that the airliner was being tailed by two Ukrainian fighter jets at the time. So kind of it's all pointing now to the situation where the it looks like the Ukrainians shot it down and tried to blame it on the Russians. So I guess we'll have to wait and see what happens with the Dutch air safety investigation, but if they never even got to the site, I guess I'm not sure what they're going to be able to conclude. But also, in this situation in Ukraine, there's kind of an economic battle going on, you know, on the sidelines here. The U.S. and the European Union have imposed sanctions on the Russians in response to their unhelpful behavior, they say, in the Ukraine. These sanctions have mostly been symbolic. Limits the travel and financial activities of a few individuals from Russia. But the Russians have responded by canceling agricultural imports from the U.S., Canada, European Union, and Australia. And they've since bought these foodstuffs from other locations. But, you know, it's hurting the farmers and countries and companies in many of these other countries, and it's resulted in tens of billions of dollars of lost revenues. So it seems like these sanctions are hurting the, you know, the U.S. and the European Union a lot more than they are the Russians, for that matter. So Russians now are trading more with China, Brazil, India in other currencies than the U.S. dollar. So this is having a secondary effect in that the U.S. dollar is not in as much demand now and may end up losing its reserve currency status in the world, which would be a severe economic blow to the U.S. If you haven't heard of that or understand that, you ought to look on the internet and look at there's a lot of great videos on what will happen to the U.S. dollar if they lose their reserve currency status. The Russians also have responded by opening a large surveillance base in Cuba. And this is a base they used to use back in the world in the Cold War era. But, you know, when they ran out of money back in the 90s, they decided to close it down. But they're opening it back up again. They're going to have 3,000 spies now in Cuba that are listening to communications in the U.S. So we're back to the old Cold War situation here again. And even if there is no active shooting, you know, the world is getting more polarized. And even the chance of a false flag attack or some misstep can really escalate the situation. So, I don't know, I consider this to be an extremely dangerous situation. And whoever's provoking it from the sidelines, from the background here, it's playing a very dangerous game, and you know, you don't, push a nuclear power like Russia, especially now. You know, they have a very strong leader who's very interested in seeing the power of the Soviet Union reestablished after they lost their status in the world back in the 90s, and so they have reasons now to kind of play hardball, and so it doesn't play well into our hands when, you know, that is the situation. So, and, you know, we just passed the 100th year anniversary of the beginning of World War One in that region. And I don't think anybody in that area wants to see that happen again. Anyway, that's what I've got for the news here. If you have any comments to any of these reports, or if you've got any other calls, any other information you want to put out there, feel free to give a call to the studio, 826-7771. I'll give you a chance to discuss these topics a little bit before we move on to our next segment. Looks like we have a call already.
No,
nope.
Sorry.
They don't want to go on the air? Okay.
We have this one that's been standing by on line one. Is that somebody that...
No, I don't think so. unless you answered it. All right, well, let's go to the phone or go to some music real quick, and then give people a chance to call. Otherwise, we'll move on and start talking about the reefs in Kauai.
I do.
You have a call. Okay, it looks like we do have a call. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Please. Let me turn my radio off, please.
Okay.
Hello, Dave.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just want to make a comment. I don't know if most people are aware of the history of preceding World War One, and basically, I think it reflects on the situation today in terms of the people who, the big money people who basically run the world. And so basically, before World War One, the Rothschilds loaned money to all the powers that were on either side of the issue, all the different treaties. They loaned money to the Americans, the British, the French, the Germans, the Russians. So just like today, the evil ones who want to reduce the world's population, who want to have a major war because then they can make more money, and it's good for them. They don't care about the suffering of people. I believe it's the same situation that's parallel today. Just as when we, you know, one of the reasons why we went into Iraq is because Mr. Hussein wanted to, you know, change the methods of, you know, buying oil and not
accepting... Not using U.S. dollars.
Yeah, so I just think that, you know, if you believe the mainstream media, even PBS or BBC or whatever, and I, you know, I survey all the different sources from extreme right wing to extreme left wing. If you believe these sources, then I think I've got a couple bridges in Hyena I could sell you.
Yeah, now I don't really understand what happened in World War One either, for that matter. It was a long time ago. I mean, you look up in the history books, that's when, you know, Archduke Ferdinand was assassinated,
well,
and that kicked off the whole thing. But it's hard to believe that one bullet would start a world war.
Well, you know, as I'm saying, the point is, just as today, these evil people, they back all sides, so no matter who wins or loses, they win. And, you know, I just, you know, I may be totally incorrect, but I don't think so. I believe there are evil forces today that are encouraging world conflict. I mean, just as like our buddies, our U.S. allies, are backing ISIS, the Islamic State, the Saudis, the people in Qatar, the people United Arab Emirates,
and the Israelis too, for that matter.
Yes, and the point, and then of course Turkey. So all our supposed allies are backing our supposed enemies. And so, I mean, what's up with that?
Well, but they were supposed to attack Syria. They weren't supposed to attack Iraq. You know, that was kind of the deal. You know, we did the training for them in Jordan. I've seen the videos of them being trained.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, seeing the money being transferred from all these other countries that you mentioned.
Right.
But they were supposed to unseat Assad out of Syria. They weren't supposed to go in and start attacking Iraq. So, you know, it's like we you know, make this monster, and it turns around and attacks us.
Well, we identified, the leader of Syria as being our enemy. Of course, he is Shia, and the Islamic State are Sunni, just as the leaders of most of these major countries. The people may be Shia. They may be, the mass of people in all these Muslim countries are Shia. They're not Sunni. But the leaders in most of these countries are Sunni. And basically, you know, the Shia are like the Catholics. They're the original faith. And the Sunni, they're the ones who, long time ago, their relatives killed the closest relative of the Prophet, Muhammad. Therefore, there's a long-standing grudge. So it's just like, but in terms of real politics, the boots on the ground today, the majority of people in the world are not Sunni, they're Shia. And so they're like, but their leaders are the Sunni. And from the Sunni's perspective, it's like, well, listen, God or Allah, he works through those who have the power. So That's their interpretation of the real politic. I just think it's like more than sad when we see, you know, even our great President Obama. Mr. You know, I mean,
you're not a fan.
No, the point is, you know, I'm glad. You know, I mean, he gives great speeches, and every time I hear him speak, I go, yeah, you're right on, dude. But then when I look at his, you know, his actions, like, for example, destroying the Constitution more than Mr. Bush, to number two, going after more whistleblowers than any of the other presidents. I mean, he makes Nixon look like a liberal.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I just think it's, you know, I don't trust any of these folks. Yeah. And I just, you know, thank God we live on Kauai where there's a little bit of sanity, but not much.
Well, caller, let me ask you. We've had this discussion before,
yes,
about...
Sir.
Vladimir Putin.
Yes, sir.
You know, in my mind, and I, you know, I've said this before on the air, that
right.
He seems like a reasonable person in this situation. You know, he's doing the things that you would expect them to do. He's
right.
Saying, you know, he hasn't fired a shot in this whole situation. You know, when they supposedly invaded, took over Crimea, they, you know, not a shot was fired. You know, now the installed government of Kiev has killed thousands of its own people. You know, he hasn't invaded to protect them. He hasn't done anything provocative in the situation. So what do you think of him now?
Well, you know, when I first heard your opinion, I was like, what? I can't believe Dave is saying this. So, I've been doing research on this, and I do think there is a tremendous degree of opinion out there, and I would, you know, I could see, you know, why you take the position you do. The only thing I just keep in mind is, look what happened with World War II. The Russians lost about 27 million people.
Yeah.
Now, it may be true that, like, for example, Mao said, well, nuclear weapons are a paper tiger because they have so many people to burn up. So if there's a nuclear exchange, they still got a billion people plus. Or
in their army. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing about Russia. Now, Russia has a very limited population. Their population has shrunk down to very, very little, like, I don't know, like 200 million people. And so, you know, I've read a lot of comments saying that, well, if you read, like, a lot of these people who are formerly in the State Department, I forget the gentleman's name, but you see that a lot of people are saying the real impetus behind pushing for World War III is the U.S. And just as the neocons in the early 90s said, oh, we can't let any of the world powers get ahead of us, you know, so we've always got to be ahead of them in the military game, and therefore, you know, first strike is our best way to go.
Yeah, we're not going to let anybody compete with us on a global
I hope
scale.
That's not true. I think it's like, you know, I mean, these people I think most of these people who run these institutions and countries are evil. They love power. They're like the white shoe boys, the president of the student body, and I just hope that some the more gentle spirits of our being of Earth and whatever can, like, you know, try to, like, chill these folk out.
Yeah.
It's just sad.
Or just take them out of power. All right. Hey, great. Thanks for the call.
Thank you, Dave.
Aloha.
Bye-bye.
I guess we've got a little bit of a technical difficulty with our second line here. So, unfortunately, anybody tried to call in while we had one caller on the line may not have been able to get through. So we're just kind of limping along with one phone line. But let's go play a little music first, then we'll come back in just a minute. Okay, we have another caller here. Let's go to the phones. Hello, caller, you're on the air.
Oh, I'm Charlie Brown. I'd like to talk about how a book, The Shock Doctrine, The Race of Disaster Capitalism by...
Naomi Klein.
She covers a lot of the cases in, the 90s to 2000s.
Right. Yeah, I'm familiar with that book there. It's pretty informative, and it really does explain a lot of what's going on. What do you see as the correlation there?
Well, I quickly come to the conclusion that people are getting wise to the oppression behind the Chicago School of Economics attempts to shrink the government service sector, like roads and bridges and stuff, and have other things, like perhaps military. And that's the tightest summary of the book I would like people to consider. And then the book documents everything, the uprising in Poland and South Africa and Chile and all those many places.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like who is it, Rahm Emanuel, he was Obama's right-hand man, I forget what the chief of staff or whatever, and he said you never let a good opportunity to make change or something like that, never lose an opportunity in a crisis. And so when a crisis comes up, you know, then you can start putting in the really onerous requirements and legislation that you couldn't pass normally. You know, if you want to take away the First Amendment, people are going to fight back. But you say, oh, hey, there's a war going on. We got to clamp down on it, you know, and they accept it. And so, you know, you never let an opportunity like that pass without, you know, making a little ground toward your agenda.
Yes, so many people can play the bet on all sides that are going to war and take the money.
Yeah.
Well, I could be brief and leave it at that for now.
Yeah. Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
All right, aloha. Okay, we're going to move on here. In the studio right now, we've got Terry Lilly, and he's a biologist, and he dives the reefs of the North Shore of Kauai every day, just about, for many, many years. And so why don't you give us a little background on yourself and kind of your project in monitoring environmental conditions in the ocean here.
Sure. I've been a biologist professionally for over 40 years now and all around the world doing scuba diving and reef and underwater studies. And I used to surf professionally and travel a lot, and the ocean's pretty much my home. In the last 5-6 years, I've been doing an underwater high-def video series for schools all throughout Hawaii for a nonprofit documenting our marine life. And I've done over 1,000 hours of high-definition underwater videography in Kauai alone. And I've spent over 10,000 hours underwater worldwide. I live in Honolulu, and so during the middle of this underwater videography that I was doing for the schools, I discovered this coral disease. Most people know about it now, and I discovered it about 3 years ago. And since then, I've probably had more hours underwater studying coral diseases than anyone in the world. On the North Shore of Kauai, I've spent over 800 hours underwater at 60 different dive sites monitoring the death of our reefs here, and I've put that out in media worldwide and had work and support from University of Hawaii, NOAA, USGS, Scripps Institute, and now some folks that do work with National Geographic and Discovery Channel. You know, the last caller, I just want to share something that I saw out at Honolulu today and yesterday, and this is over 300 times I've done high-def videos out of Honolulu. We have a military practice going on here on the North Shore of Kauai that's scary.
Is this part of RIMPAC?
It's called the Pacific Pivot, or the Pivotal Shift, or whatever it is, but it's a 5-year electronic warfare games that they're testing on the North Shore of Kauai. RIMPAC is only when they just invited the other countries in to participate. Right now, along the North Shore of Kauai, they're using electronic warfare with high-intensity sonar, laser beams, above-water microwaves. All of this stuff they can use to actually implode submarines, implode boats. Why are they doing all of this? Why is Kauai being the biggest test arena in the world right now for electronic warfare? By the way, folks, people do not know, including the military, and I'll have to tell you a communication I just had, people do not know the outcome of this electronic warfare and what's going to happen. Now, In Honolulu Bay yesterday, and I have thousands of hours and lots of reports, and most of you have seen it on the news and the TV, the entire reef at Honolulu Bay is dissolving. Almost every single 500 to 1,000-year-old coral is dissolving and turning into mud. This has all happened within the last year. The last few days alone, there's several hundred corals that have been broken by, I feel, the sonic blasting underwater. We don't know anything else that could possibly do it.
Now, have you ever felt any of these sound blasts while you're down there?
Oh, not only can you feel them, I've passed out underwater. You can
really
hear the pinging. You get vibrations.
I've heard pinging while I was out diving before.
I got dizzy. I had a heart attack underwater. I've passed out underwater. I've had to be rushed to the hospital three times now after diving here. You can feel it. Now, I'm just telling you, out at Honolulu right now, there is not one healthy coral left alive. Not one. And it's not going to repair, folks.
Now, when was the last time you saw healthy coral out there?
I have done, like I said, over 10,000 scuba dives in my life. And I do it day by day and I take videos. So it's not just me. I can show this to people.
Right.
5 years ago, when I started diving heavily along the North Shore of Kauai, almost all the reefs were relatively healthy. About 3 years ago, we had, an outbreak of a coral disease that's killed over a million corals a year along the North Shore, this black band coral disease. About a year ago, the gigantic old growth corals that are the structure of the reef itself, they're what makes the drag under the underneath of the wave to make the waves good out at Honolulu and tunnels and cannons and so forth. These giant corals are not only dissolving, they're weakening, and the reef is so weak, they're falling off the reef onto the muddy floor below. And I have thrown out to every major scientist, including Jean-Michel Cousteau, all the way to the head of NOAA in Washington, D.C., to the people at Scripps, none of them, not one of them, can come up with a theory as to why the reefs are collapsing along the North Shore of Kauai at the rate that there are. This is nuts.
Yeah. Now, how about other areas of the world? I don't want to get too far off of Kauai, but, you know, is this happening other parts of the world, or is it worse here than anywhere else?
There's only two places this is happening. I've done thousands of dives all throughout Hawaii, and I also work with the University of Hawaii on this stuff. And the only place that it's happening anywhere close to what's happening on the North Shore of Kauai is Kaneohe Bay, and they're happening to do the same electronic warfare in Kaneohe Bay. That's where it was invented originally. Those are the only two places in the Hawaiian Islands there are anything remotely to the destruction of the reefs like we have here. Now, I just went back to French Polynesia. I've been to Bora Bora, Morea, Tahiti, Costa Rica. I've been all over the Pacific studying reefs. There isn't anywhere that even has anything within 1% as crazy as this.
As I know, in the South Pacific, just a few years ago, they were talking about the bleaching episodes where the coral were dying.
That's a great question. And simple facts on that. And the people at UH really do a good job at this. When you have an outbreak of bleaching or an outbreak of disease or whatever it may be on a reef, having a 1 to 4% outbreak of something like that is somewhat normal. Having a 5 to 8% outbreak of bleaching or disease is above normal, and that's worrisome. Many places in the world are having worrisome problems on the reef due to rising sea levels, acid levels,
temperature
and all that. So reefs everywhere are not doing exactly very good. But the comparison to Kauai, out at Honolulu right now, we have a 95% death rate of the corals.
Wow.
At tunnels, the same thing. At Anini, the same thing. And this is happening within the last 3 years, and it's accelerated, virtually doubled in the last 60 days. I have video and pictures of thousands of corals out at Honolulu 2 months ago that at least appeared to be healthy. Some of them are over 1,000 years old. Now, after RIMPAC started, I went out every day and took video of these 1,000 corals. Many and most of them now are diseased, dissolving, or have been shattered into pieces. So it doesn't take much of a scientist to figure out what's going on here, that we have something that's so large and devastating. And then, at the same time, if you just want to spend a little bit of time and research the technology they're using on the North Shore of Kauai underwater, nobody knows what that's going to do to a reef. They know it kills whales and dolphins. And by the way, let me just tell you, Dave, how heavy duty this is. I put out all of these reports. Edmund Silva from the Hawaiian Kingdom filed a decree to the United States of America. It was delivered right to President Obama. Within 2 days, I got a call back and letters and emails back from General Dempsey. He's the Joint Chief of Staff for President Obama, wanting to see all my information about the reef struck, the reef problems here due to RIMPAC. So
you get an
answer back in 24 hours from the White House. You know that they know they have a problem.
Right. Now, we have a phone call here. I'm going to go in just a second. But how do you differentiate between the black band coral disease and the damage that you're seeing in Hanalei now, then?
Is it two separate
situations?
No, not really. It's really simple. Remember a few years back, 30 years back, when people got AIDS, then they died of tuberculosis, or they died of a common cold.
Pneumonia.
And everyone said they died of tuberculosis or pneumonia. They died because their resistance was weakening. Whatever was there to gobble them up, gobbled them up.
Right.
Same thing now. We have the giant mound corals, the rice corals, the branching corals, are kind of three different groups of corals here. They all have their immune system compromised, and they're all severely weakened. Well, the rice corals happen to be gobbled up by this black band coral disease. The mound corals appear to basically just be crumbling and dissolving. The branching corals seem to be actually fracturing and breaking. So we got to get away from looking at whether it's a disease or an algae. That's not what's killing the reef here. Dr. Terry Work did immune system studies on these corals, and every coral out of I think there was 500 of them that we did, had the immune system severely compromised. So something's lowering the resistance of our reefs throughout the North Shore of Kauai.
Okay. Well, let's go to the phones then. Somebody had a question for you.
Yeah.
Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Thanks. My question is, do you think there's any danger from the effects of the radiation that the military uses on our general health situation here in Kauai?
That's a great question. As a biologist, the answer would have to be yes. I just throw that back to people. And I'm not an alarmist. I don't do those kinds of things any way, shape, or form. But I just throw it back to people. There are trillions of coral polyps dying every few hours along the North Shore of Kauai. Simply that amount of dead biomass in the water is going to make bacterial problems. How can anything be healthy for one animal, a human being, when all the other animals around them are dead or dying?
Right.
So, we don't have to be rocket scientists to prove that. When we have a reef collapse and so much things dying in the ocean right now, people can go on my Facebook page, by the way, and see this minute by minute. We put posts up almost every day. It's no way in the world can this be healthy to people. Proving exactly what it's doing to people is going to take time. There are folks coming over now that have worked with National Geographic and Discovery Channel, doctors, PhDs, are all going to be convening here in Kauai here shortly to try to answer those questions.
Now, I just got through reading a book called Overpowered, and the basic thesis of the book was that it used to be assumed that non-ionizing forms of radiation, that means something other than like, gamma rays from X-ray machines and CAT scans, etc. That non-ionizing radiation, that means radiation from your computer or your blender, that these things did not damage DNA. Well, it's been proven that all forms of electromagnetic frequency radiation damages. So I recommend anybody who's really interested in their own health, regardless of the health of Kauai, that they should check out this book and check out the recent research the last 10 years about the actual biological, the damaging to our DNA and the DNA. I mean, it's not just the acidification of our oceans from these brain dead individuals, but it's also these extreme amounts of electromagnetic radiation that I am also concerned about.
Hey Brad, you got it right big time. And let me just tell you some bonus.
We'll take that off the air then. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Let me just tell you some big time facts on that. The people that have been advising me and our scientific group are the ones that patented electromagnetic water softening units for people like Culligan. They put electromagnetic radiation through your pipes. What that does is that changes the ionic structure of the water itself, and that pulls out the calcium carbonate out of the water so you have soft water. They use like a tenth of a watt of electromagnetic radiation. Beaming above our heads in Kauai right here, because the FAA knows a lot of this because it interferes with air traffic. During RIMPAC, we had 30 million watts of microwaves being beamed over our heads during RIMPAC. We probably have an average right now of 5 to 10 million per day bouncing off the ionosphere back down here on Kauai. Now, no one knows the effects of that amount of electromagnetic radiation, but we do know that the calcium carbonate is being pulled out of the reefs. Microwaves hitting water changes the ionic structure of the water, the pH of the water, the ending result. It pulls calcium carbonate out of the water. The Culligan people prove this. This is modern science. Now, our reefs are dissolving. At the same time, what makes me fearful is I'm diving and snorkeling and having heart palpitations, and I'm going to go in for blood tests to see if I'm getting calcium carbonate pulled out of my blood and my bones by the same process. So we got to wake up, Kauai. This is a real disaster going on here.
Now, have you taken any measurements of EMF radiation around? I know, you know, PMRF is the source of a lot of them, and they kind of direct them up or out away from the island for the most part.
That's a great question, Dave. And the answer is no, but we just started.
Okay.
And what we do know, we're going down the Kalalau coastline tomorrow and tracking this very thing. We know where the 14 microwave towers are. They're high-intensity microwave towers that beam about a million watts apiece or more. Well, anyway, these microwaves are supposed to go up into the atmosphere and dissipate. But we have this constant cloud cover along the coastline. Microwaves bounce off of water molecules. That's what they're supposed to do. We're theorizing that this high-intensity microwave the Navy's using is bouncing off the constant clouds, hitting the surface of the water, and making the water soft, and that's what's dissolving the reefs. This is just a theory, okay?
Right.
But we have scientists and good equipment on the way, and I hope to be back on this show with some of the results in
That'd
the future.
That'd be great. If anybody else has a question for Terry Lilly, Dr. Lilly, and give us a call in the studio.
And I'm not a doctor.
Oh, you're not. Not a real doctor.
Not just a biologist, one that's all.
Okay,
biologist with 60,000 hours in the water studying.
I think that would qualify you. You should get a PhD for that.
Nah, I don't need one.
826-7771. If the phone lines are full there, call the office line 826-7774, and we'll try to get you on the air. Now, as a sidebar, you're talking about 10,000 hours of diving. That's an incredible amount of diving there.
Yeah.
Besides, you know, the events that you're talking about, I mean, what are the effects of the body on that? You're not really super deep, though, right?
And
you're probably
No, this is
20, 30 feet?
Yeah, most of the time diving, coral reefs usually are less than 60 feet deep because the coral needs to have ultraviolet light to grow algae within the coral.
Okay.
So the thing is that for me, diving is what I like to do, and it's just fun. I'm in the water every day. But it's called repetitive analysis. What I do that no one's done here on Kauai, not anywhere even close, is I've been out to all of these reefs almost every day. I dive the reefs on the North Shore of Kauai about 200 days out of the year, and the rest of my surf the reefs. So what I do is I can see the changes day in and day out, just like you see the changes of your kids when you're raising your kid. And you know there's a change, but maybe a friend across the country only sees your kid once a year, twice a year. They don't pick up on these subtle changes.
Yeah.
I pick up on these subtle changes, and I have a video camera with me every time so I can document. Get this one. Dave, I've got over 300,000 individual pictures of coral disease and corals dying on the North Shore of Kauai. 300,000. No one has that kind of documentation in the whole rest of the Hawaiian Islands combined.
Right.
And it's because of politics, this stuff got ignored for several years. We hope and think now that that's all been turned around, and I'm very positive that we can go forward. But I have a massive amount of data showing what's going on here. And you know the interesting thing, Dave? This is the part that always makes me mad. I've said this to other people over the last 2 years that have poo-pooed this coral disease and reef destruction. I just said, why don't you go out there and look at it with me? And you know what? I've had like 5 people in 3 years willing to go out and even look at it. They don't even want to go look.
Right.
But they'll sit in their office in Lihue and say, oh, this is all a bunch of BS. We got to get back to studying the environment like the Hawaiians did, with real people that were out in the environment every day. They were the kahunas, they were the experts, and people listened to them.
Right. Hey, we have somebody on the phones here. I'd like to talk to you. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Thank you. I wanted to ask, is anybody checking radiation levels at the reef? And how does Fukushima fit into all of this?
That's a great question, and the answer is yes, absolutely.
I'll listen off the air, guys. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for the call.
At this point in time, I talk and communicate with the people that work for NOAA almost every day, and they have buoys and boats all out offshore here and from Hawaii, all over the place, by the way, that are checking for the Fukushima radiation. At this point in time, it appears, with everything that I've seen from very honest high-tech scientists, that the radiation is not here yet. It takes time because it went in the northern current up to Alaska, down Washington, northern California. It's a good possibility why there's a giant sea star die-off all up the west coast. All kinds of problems happening from this radiation is what it looks like. But we don't have it here yet. But gosh, if we had another thing to our reef systems here that's a problem, we already have about 4 or 5 major disasters going on here in Kauai at the same time. So God can only help us if that stuff gets here.
Well, how long does it take for those currents to get here? Because it's been, what, 3 years?
Well, it's not necessarily the currents completely, because as time goes by, the radiation's going to dissipate. And it kind of depends on how much radiation is actually coming out still of Fukushima on a day-by-day basis.
Oh, it's bad.
I know.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that any of us have really legitimate results on that. So if the radiation keeps coming out and it keeps flowing at a constant rate, the figures I've seen, within a year to 3 years, we may start seeing it here in Hawaii. But that's not my job. There's people with high-tech equipment that need to be out there monitoring the situation, but I talk to them daily. And as of yet, we haven't found any of that, including on all of the buoys and plastic bottles and stuff that wash up on the shore here that I've sent over for testing. So
right. We have another caller. Aloha, caller. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for your wonderful program. I totally believe everything you're saying. I had cancer and had to take radiation, and right after that, I started getting osteopenia. My bones were shrinking.
Yeah. Oh, you bet.
So, you know,
that's a common part of radiation therapy. You know, you have to have all kinds of supplements and things added into your calcium level in your body because it depletes it. I mean,
yes, it does.
We've known this in science for a long, long, long time. It's just kind of funny. I guess a lot of people didn't realize that coral reefs are made out of calcium carbonate, like our bones.
Exactly. And it's also a living polyp and a living animal, a zoophyte.
Yep.
And that little tiny animal is very stressed. It's a very, very tiny microscopic animal. And it is stressed from being pulverized from all of this sonic blasting. So, yes, its immune system is...
Boy, let me tell you what I saw yesterday, and I've seen this at Inini tunnels, cannons, all over the place. I have tons of video now. These beautiful branching corals, these gorgeous big antler corals, they're the one that's kind of the premier beautiful coral of the Hawaiian Islands. They're like bones. That they are broken. They're not exploded like a bomb where all the pieces went out equally. That there, I have movies of this giant antler coral, and half of it broke off in one spot. It sheared off, was upside down, and landed on top of the remaining half. I have some that just have only the tips all sheared off. And what happens, what I tell people to make it kind of simple, I go, it's like you take a hammer and you pound on the windshield of your car. Tap, 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 tap. The windshield is absorbing the energy of that hammer, absorbing the energy of your arm put into the hammer. Then you do one too many taps, and what does that windshield do?
It cracks.
It cracks. Well, that's what's happening to the reefs. We know that calcium carbonate absorbs electromagnetic radiation. You know that. And so what happens when it absorbs enough of the radiation, it vibrates the calcium carbonate to the point where that energy has to come out and the coral shatters.
Yes.
And that's exactly what we're seeing.
Yeah, and the coral is so stressed from all of this pounding. The immune system is affected and makes it even weaker to combat this attack.
Yeah, and that's why people, and you know this too, a lot of people that are cancer survivors know this same thing. It's cumulative problems over years.
Yes, exactly.
We know on the North Shore that we have a mud problem because people dig in the wetlands and pump mud out to sea. We know we have a chemical problem because Roundup's being sprayed on all of the fields and we have atrazine and all this junk flowing out to sea. We know we have a heavy metal problem from all of the old farm chemicals, arsenic, lead, zinc, all these things that came from the old sugar canes in the old fields. We know that we have now added on top of that all of this sonar and microwaves.
And the chemtrails.
And the chemtrails and the barium and the aluminum. We know all this stuff. You can only add so many stressors to any physical entity before it's going to hit a breaking point and break down, and then disease or whatever is going to take over.
Yes. And the phytoplankton and the bivalves and the coral are the first to go, which is our food chain.
Oh, absolutely. It's really, really, really a shame to see what's happening. The good thing is, I think the positive part of all of this is that we have a community here on the North Shore of Kauai. We have a lot of experts, a lot of wonderful people, a lot of great scientists. There's plenty enough money to be put together if the political folks would get involved, where we could take the North Shore of Kauai, we could figure out these problems, we could turn it around, we could study it, we even know how to restore the reefs, we can stop the mud flowing out of the rivers, we can stop the chemicals, we can stop the heavy metals, we can stop the sonar.
Yes, we can.
We know how to do that, and that's my onward mission, is to put together a team of people that's going to do just that, and then we're going to make it a model to show the rest of the world how you can live on a sustainable island in the middle of the ocean, and that's my end goal.
That's fantastic, and I thank you, and I have to say, I hope you have your material, your portfolios, all of your information stashed, double stashed.
Yeah, it is. It's in, get this one. It's in Congress people's office on the mainland, in movie producers' offices in Honolulu, in safe deposit vaults, uplinked
right on.
On YouTube.
Right on, because you know, down in Ferguson, Missouri, they're arresting people with big cameras right now.
Well, I've already been shot at, beat up, broken arm, and about a dozen other things. So I know how the ball game's played. I hate to say.
Thank you so much, Terry, and this wonderful man here running this show. I'll let you go now. Thank
appreciate
you.
Appreciate you calling
much.
In. Aloha.
Right. Aloha. I tell you what, it's just about 5 o'clock, and I got a little station business to do here. You're listening to KKCR Honolulu, KAQA Kilauea, and K284AL in Haleiwa, Oahu. And this is the Out of the Box Show. It's made possible by listeners like you in partnership with these wonderful underwriters.
Aya's Garden, all-natural garden and greenhouse supply in Kapa'a, down Kukui Street from the Dragon Building. Fertilizers, amendments, soil, seeds, garden and farm organic growing supplies. Open Monday through Saturday. More information at 822-7333 or visit Aya's Garden on Facebook.
Neil Norman and the Hawaii Life Brokerage Ohana proudly supports GMO-free Kauai, agricultural biodiversity, and sustainable farming practices, such as community gardens, food forests, seed saving, and beekeeping. Malama aina.
If you'd like to learn more about the 2014 political candidates, please visit the KKCR.org audio archives page. There you will find links to political forums recorded live in July and early August. Kauai Community Radio, keeping you informed. Visit KKCR.org.
Okay, again, this is Out of the Box. I'm the host, Dave Giroux, and we've got an hour left in the show. We're going to continue talking with Terry Lilly, biologist and expert on North Shore Kauai reefs. And we do have a caller. Do you want to go? Let's go straight to the phones. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Yes, I just want to thank you so much for your work. It's amazing what you're doing. You're breaking ground here in Kauai, and I thank you for that. And I just want to bring to Kauai's attention the weather modification that is being done by the federal government here. I live in Anahola Bay on the bluff, and I am witnessing, unfortunately, low-lying spraying by government planes. And most recently, the last, since the hurricane season began, and I fear for my children's health and the health of humanity here on Kauai from what I've been witnessing and documenting for the last 4 years. And unfortunately, NOAA and the federal government are involved, and I just want to see what your thoughts are on weather modification and low-lying spraying, not chemtrails up high, but low-lying spraying, and if you've witnessed this yourself.
Well, caller, let me ask you before we let Mr. Lilly respond. What are you seeing exactly? What are your observations?
Well, I've been observing the skies for 4 years, and I've been observing NOAA on a regular basis, and I've been watching them take their satellite offline whenever they are using what I believe are the electronics that he's speaking of. And first I might just say that I know that hydrogen sulfide is something that is alarming and should be brought to the attention of Kauai. And as far as the government planes, I'm talking big government planes that are spraying very low to the point where it sickens me. And I've made calls at no avail. And I've been told, if I can pull off numbers off the plane, it's something that they can look at. And they're very large gray planes. They usually fly in the early mornings or late evenings. And if you pay attention to our weather, and if you know anything about hurricanes and storms, they are stopping rain here on Kauai. We are getting acid rain because of what they are doing. You see the misting now, not rain, and we are not getting the rain that we have needed. We are in a drought per se at times, and they are the cause. My children play in Anahola Bay, and within 24 hours of them being in the bay, they fall ill. Fortunately, I know how to detox their bodies, so they aren't ill with this sickness that plagues everyone for weeks and weeks at a time, especially those that are susceptible.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Lilly.
Hey, really, truly, and I feel exactly the same way you do because I'm out in the water every day. And what I'll do is I'm just going to throw that back out to NOAA right now, and let me just tell you a little bit about what's right on NOAA's webpage. I deal with John Christensen. He's the head of NOAA for the United States of America for the Coral Reef Divisions. And I work with and a lot of the folks with NOAA. I communicate with them day by day. And right on the NOAA webpage, if you go to Hawaii Climate Change and Sea Level Rise on the webpage, that there is all kinds of info from NOAA that we have two warm water converging currents. One in the northern hemisphere, one in the southern hemisphere, that's going to collide together in Hawaii in the next 2 to 3 years. NOAA is even saying that's going to be a full-blown disaster for Hawaii. They gave a talk about it to the state legislature. Our governor, current governor, had a news article saying that in Hawaii we're looking at possible disasters in the next 3 years. The water sea temperatures are supposed to rise several degrees in the next couple years. What that means is all these Category 1 hurricanes coming in right now towards Hilo that go down from Category 4 to Category 1 have the potential of staying at a Category 4 hurricane. We know that they are altering the weather patterns here in Kauai. We already know that NOAA is predicting all of these changes to happen. So I think that we better wake up, people, and start seeing what's happening and is accessible to all of us to actually see. This is going to be devastating on the coastal community, along with the coral reefs. And by the way, as the coral reefs die and the sea level rises, there's more damage than to the shoreline houses and business communities. So we have a lot of problems here, but I tend to just go right back to the experts, and they, what you just got done talking about, they already have info about a lot of this stuff right up on their web page, and people aren't paying attention.
Okay, caller, are you still there? Hello? She's gone. Okay. Well, let's see. Yeah, we got another caller here in just a minute. But to follow up on your last statement then,
yeah,
about the impacts, what maybe a lot of people wouldn't really understand what it means for the reef to die. I mean,
great question.
You know, we go about our daily lives, and you know, a lot of people don't spend that much time in the water, and they don't really know what the impact might be. What is, say, the worst case or likely outcome?
You know, like I know, is that people normally don't react to anything until it hits them in their pocketbook.
Right. Yeah.
Now, if you paid attention this last winter at Rocky Point by Sunset Beach, over on the north shore of Oahu, a bunch of very expensive homes fell into the ocean. Next year, you're going to see more. Well, I already did reef studies out in front of those houses at Rocky Point 3 years ago and said, these houses are going to fall into the ocean next
year.
You know why? And I did even two TV news stories on it, because the coral reefs, the coral jets up into off the reef, up towards the surface.
Yeah.
The coral makes a drag on the underside of the wave that causes the wave to break. When you have a good hollow surf wave, it's because you have a good coral underneath the wave causing it to break. Now, when that coral dies, what the reef does, it just becomes totally flat, no drag. So there's 16,000 tons of energy in a big winter swell. So instead of breaking like out at Cammies in front of Rocky Point, or in the houses there, then the swell backs off and all of the energy of the swell hits the beach and takes out the homes. You can see this right now at Haena. Just go down to tunnels. The corals have died out there at tunnels. The whole inside reef is almost 99% dead. And look at the wear and tear on the beach. They lost 10 feet permanently of sand last winter alone. So the corals are the first line of defense to protect homes and businesses on the beach.
Okay.
And then you have rising sea levels, so it's going to get worse, not better. So people should be highly concerned about our reefs dying for many reasons, but that's a huge one.
Yeah. How about, like, to the fish? I mean, we get a lot of our protein from the fish in the oceans here. How's that going to be affected by the reef?
Well, I mean, that's just kind of pretty much a no-brainer. We have $1 billion worth of tourism that comes to Hawaii to see our coral reefs snorkeling and diving. And that $1 billion is $1 billion that's going to be lost in the near future if we don't do something. Obviously, for anyone that loves the Earth, planet Earth, loves people and animals, knows that all life came from the sea. We live off the sea. We have oxygen produced by the sea. If the sea creatures die, we're going to die. It's just that simple. I like everyone just to look at, like, that one gal that talked about having cancer and cancer therapy and stuff, is to look at the ocean as a human body. Just very simple. Mother Earth here is the human body. The Hawaiians were masters at this for the last 1,800 years of looking at the whole ecosystem instead of one little bitty part of it. And so if you have half of your body dies, which is under the water, do you think the other half of your body is going to live? I mean, I could spend 100 hours right now and get technical about how minute by minute everything you do on land relates directly to what's going on in the ocean out here underwater. But it just, you got to come back just to simple logic. If you let our reefs die, we're going to lose tourism. It's unhealthy in the water. It's going to produce bacteria. It's going to produce an unhealthy, toxic ecosystem for people to be in. And it's going to affect every living creature on land. Just that simple.
Okay. We have a caller. Let's go to the phones. Aloha, caller. You're on the air.
Yeah. This is quite an interesting program about the reef and the water, and it's just amazing that there's not that much input into it, and people are really, I think a lot of, when I tell a lot of people what's going on about the reef, I would say half the people just look at me with complete defensive.
I know. I hit me too.
You know, like, here he goes again. You know, I'm always bringing up.
Yeah, I same with me.
To meet skeptics in regard to safety. Like, I happen to be a member of CERT, and this past hurricane threat that we had, I decided to call around. CERT is Community Emergency Response Team. And about 10 years ago, we formed up the teams on all the communities, and Kilauea was one of the first in the island. And now, if anybody knows about that, that's listening, if Kilauea does have a CERT team, if they would please let me know, I'd appreciate it. Because then I called Anahola, because I live in Moloa, and the number I was given by the fire department for Anahola was a non-working number.
Believe me, I feel for you more than anything, and you hit it right on the head big time here, that I have been, and thank you for calling and thank you for saying this, because it's my hot point and everybody knows it. I have filed over 300 reports, folks, with avid pictures and video of this coral reef die-off over the last 3 years with every politician in the county of Kauai and almost every politician in the Hawaiian Islands. And
wow.
Almost none of them have even bothered to respond. We have to really, really, really assess folks here, our leaders, because they have their priorities in the wrong place completely. And let me say this to you. This is going to make you mad. It makes me mad. Do you know that in Kauai, over the last year, there was something like $10 million spent on building sidewalks?
Oh, I believe that.
Do you know that there was more money from the politicians spent on their flower lays that they put around their neck for their media pictures than studying the entire reefs in Kauai?
You know, the reefs are your subject, and I agree, because they affect all of us.
Yeah, they're our subject is what I really want to say, not mine.
It's the
people's subject, because the people own the reefs, and it's 79% of Kauai, by the way, is underwater.
Yeah, and my thing is for civil preparedness. It seems like these local politicians, none of them want to get involved in it. I went to a Red Cross meeting for a class on running a disaster shelter. Well, a few people, let's see, Teddy Blake, I think, showed up, and a couple of other people showed up. But I didn't see any, you know, they're only there if they're going to get a boat or if they're going to, you know, I mean, they're not interested in the people's welfare.
You know, you're totally right, and I don't get in.
Hang up and listen to you, brother, because you're really great.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you.
And we need people to be aware of the reef and of their own safety and their civil defense right to defend themselves.
It's one and the same, brother. No kidding. It's one and the same.
Oh, I believe it. Aloha.
Aloha. Thank you. You know, you just hit it on the head just really perfectly. It's priorities, simply priorities. And the priorities here in Hawaii have got all askew over the last 50 years.
Yeah. Okay. My call is gone.
Okay.
Now who is supposed to be watching the reefs? Is the state DLNR?
Great. And I'll give you a great figure on that one. And something that we're really promoting right now. When I was down in French Polynesia, Bora Bora, Moorea, Tahiti, and so forth, get this one. 30% of the reefs down there are studied and protected. And you'll never guess who pays for the study and the protection. The tourist people who own hotels.
Really?
They pay for the Intercontinental, the St. Regis, all of them. They have turtle restoration farms. They have coral breeding restoration farms. They hire full-time biologists to monitor the reefs. They have 30% of the reefs are protected. It's worked so well that the fishing community, like me, because I love to spearfish, the fishing community loves it because outside the protected areas, the fish populations are booming and everyone's catching more fish. Here in Hawaii, we have less than 1% of our reefs studied and or protected.
Wow.
Now, that's a shame.
Yeah. So how about the population of fish then that you're seeing? You know, reef fish, obviously, their populations are down, I would imagine.
Well, they're not necessarily down. They're totally changing, which is not a good thing. People come to Kauai and come to Hawaii more often than not when they snorkel. They want to see the pretty butterfly fish, the kikakapu. Mm-hmm. And they're called kikakapu because what that means is bad no-no. For thousands of years, if you killed one of the butterfly fish, you could be in deep doo-doo. You could be in a lot of problem. So you never wanted to kill a butterfly fish. Well, now, the butterfly fish eat coral polyps. Out in Hanalei Bay yesterday, I normally see 15 to 20 pairs of butterfly fish. Butterfly fish often mate for life, so you see them in pairs. They're just really cool critters. I saw two pairs of butterfly fish because there's no coral polyps left for them to eat. But the more gray-colored fish, like the nenui, the chubs, and the kala, the surgeon fish, they eat algae and the manini, and so they're actually thriving right now.
Okay.
So there's actually, if you went out and counted the total amount of fish, there's still quite a few fish, but they're different species. We don't see as many of the predator fish that we like to spear, like the omilu and the ulua and uku and fish like that. We're seeing a lot more of the algae-eating fish that are more drab and more boring. And for the tourists, that's they look at that and kind of go, wow, this is not the Hawaii I saw when I was here 10 years ago or 15 years ago.
Right.
So the balance is all messed up, and that's because the corals are dying, and the coral polyps are the baseline bottom part of the food chain on the reef and the algae. And, you know, it's when that goes, everything's going to go squirrely.
Right. Okay, well, that's all the time we have. We're going to move on to our next segment. But we've been talking to Terry Lilly, a biologist, kind of a freelance biologist who,
yeah,
on his own has been studying the reefs on the north shore of Kauai and around Hawaii, too. So we did have a call. Somebody wanted to know if you were related to John Lilly,
the dolphin.
Researcher of the dolphins.
Yeah, yeah, you know. No, actually, we are in the same family bloodline, but not directly related.
Okay.
I get asked that often, and he also gets asked that often, too. By the way, over 2 million people, by the way, worldwide have viewed this coral disease problem in Kauai. The rest of the world really cares. I just want the local people to start caring a little bit more.
Right. Okay, maybe you could repeat your contact information then.
Yeah, it's really easy. Just Facebook page. It's just under my name, Terry, T-E-R-R-Y, Lily, L-I-L-L-E-Y. And then Facebook and web is Underwater2Web. And it's the number 2. So Underwater2Web. And I'm free and open for everyone to communicate with me.
Well, thank you very much for coming in, and hopefully we'll have you back in the studio soon and try to get updates on this issue then.
Yeah, and I hope it'll be more positive. Aloha. Thank you for having me here.
Well, we're here for the truth.
That's, I know. It is what it is for now.
Okay. Right. We'll be back in a second. Okay, that's Greg Allman there, These Days. Okay, we're going to move on to our next segment. That was actually very informative talk there with Terry Lilly. Kind of scary what's going on out there, but that's the reality of the situation. So we're going to move on. We're going to be talking with Mason Chalk. Mason is a county council person. He was named into the position when somebody left last year, took a county position, then he was named right in the middle of the Bill 2491 controversy. So we're going to talk to him about that and some other things here. So, Mason, are you there?
Hey, aloha.
Hey.
David, how's it going?
Very good. Thank you for calling, and thank you for being patient on the phone.
Not a problem. Sorry I couldn't be there in person.
I don't know if you heard any of that last segment there that with Terry Lilly. He's pretty informative. We'll ask you about that in a couple of minutes. So maybe just give us a little background on you and, you know, where you're from, what's your background, family life, the stuff like that.
Okay, well, I'm from Kauai. You know, I'm born and raised here, and I lived pretty much all over the island over the years, but also went to school on Oahu and for college, also graduated there, high school and college. Spent some time with my tutu wahine in the Bay Area, and moved back to Kauai right after college to raise a family. I spent some time in the fire department with the county here, and in 2001 was in a helicopter crash where I got hurt and was forced to retire. So change of path, but I was connected to service and thrilled to continue to serve. So, you know, I got together with a few other friends, classmates, some other people from Kamehameha, and we were active in starting a few things on Kauai. I got connected with Waipa Foundation, put together a challenge ropes course that led to leadership development and the start of Leadership Kauai back in the early 2000s. And since then, I've just been in service on this same track. The work that we do with my company called Kupuae is focused on systemic change, positive socioeconomic growth. And we're focused on three areas. We're focusing education, so we're in the school system. We're focused in business. We conduct quarterly workshops for the Leadership Challenge, and we're also focused in government. So we're looking at our largest systems and seeing what we can do to help usher in some 21st century leadership development and hope to affect mindset. And so that's sort of how I've come into the picture of wanting to learn more about the challenges of government and see how I might be able to contribute.
Okay, so you were appointed to the county council, or interviewed and selected during the last, a couple of years ago. I guess it would have been about a year now?
Well, not really, about almost 8 months maybe.
Okay. Thrown into the middle of the 2491 debate.
The fire.
The fire, yeah. How did that kind of play out for you? I mean, did you get a lot of backlash from that, or people accepting
it? You know, I mean, you know, I'm about collaboration. I'm about bringing people together, and I stepped into a situation where the community was already very divided.
Right.
And I think it, to some degrees, are still, because we haven't had any scientific resolution, research. But there's a big feeling that people have on either side about the subject. And I certainly came in, you know, I wasn't very active or vocal throughout the whole process of 2491, but I'm always paying attention. And when it comes down to it, I think for any council members, we have to make decisions based on what information we have in front of us. And I dug deep, and, you know, while I'm always looking for the best outcome, most collaborative outcome, we were at a place on this island, and I went with my values. I can explain a little bit what those are, but in an acronym called Enlight, there's H, and that stands for health for me, and I think that health and safety has got to be number one, got to be a priority for our people, and that includes our Aina, you know. So I mean, just like what you folks are talking about with our natural resources and our destruction of our reef, we need to be looking intently at every opportunity to making the best choices. And so, a contentious situation for sure at the time. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of politics, of course, happening in and out, and certainly people who I think that I have looked up to for many years, mentors, you know, advised me against getting in the middle of it. I had hoped that I wasn't going to get in the middle of it. In fact, I've been asked for many years to consider putting my name in the hat. I had always felt like the only way I would make a difference was from the outside in, because there's such bureaucracy, you know, in our system. So I had intended that over the years, I'm just going to work from the outside, try and make a difference. But it was really when I got into the school system and tried to affect education, we were allowed to go into the classroom, be side by side with teachers and the students in their classroom, that my eyes opened and I realized, wow, I got to get in the trenches. I got to be inside to figure out what's going on before I can consider making a difference. And so when this opportunity came up this past year, and, you know, I was asked again, hey, will you consider putting your name in? I said yes. I said, well, I have to deal with this 2491 issue. They said, probably not. We're going to get through it. And then, you know what happened.
Right, yeah. You nearly dodged that one, but then you're thrown right in the middle of it. Hey, we have a caller here who'd like to
sure.
ask you a question. Is that all right?
Okay, sure.
Okay.
We were so thrilled with your vote and what you did for 2491, and you really came forward with your values for the Aina. I don't know. It seems like, do you feel like politics is kind of pulling you in the other way, in the other direction? Because it seems like what you stood for and then, like, how you're voting and stuff, it doesn't all match up.
Oh, yeah? Well, I mean, we can be specific. You know, when we talk about details, it's always the devil in the details. And so it's a, you know, that question I always ask myself, like, what master are you serving? You know, is it
exactly
the government or is it the people? And, you know, you go in, you get sworn in to uphold, you know, the county's need. But we certainly can't compromise the people's needs as well. And so it's a fine line, and I take everything into consideration.
Caller, do you
maybe I can be more specific.
Yeah.
I would like to know what your plans are for stopping pesticide use on the island.
Well, I think we've got a good start with this bill that we put into action. It's being challenged. I think we'll find out within a week, or hopefully sooner than October, if, you know, the preemption thing is going to kick in. I think that's going to help us, give us some tools in order to really act on the need for our community. And I mean, I, you know, one of the things that really moved me just in the day that I had to start to intake calls for stories from people who are suffering. And so, I mean, that's a no-brainer to me. You know,
yeah.
I think some people talk about, like, the Charter Amendment that came up, and they're, like, confused. Like, Mason, why'd you not support it initially and then support it. Well, you know, like I said before, we got to make decisions on what information we have in front of us. And
yeah,
we got
how much more information do we need about these pesticides? I mean, how many people have to get infected? There's so much information. We don't need more studies. We need some action.
I agree. I mean, and do we want to do it legally or not?
Well, I guess what you're sacrificing yourself for is a legal system. I want to get the job done. I don't know.
Me too. I want to get it done too. I just at what cost? And, you know, something like,
well, yeah, but look at the cost that the political system is like. So it takes so long. Nothing gets done. People get sell out. You know, Carvalho had all chemical companies at his inauguration party. He got all donations from those guys. How can we trust that? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, and there's pictures, so it's not like we have to do research. It's happening, you know?
Okay, Carl, let's let Mason respond to that. And
thank you. Sorry,
okay,
Mason.
Thanks for calling.
Okay,
just for the callers, then, if you can't get through on 826-7771, try us at 826-7774. We have a little technical difficulties there. So you want to address that?
Well, I can expand on it a little bit more. You know, again, we're trying to work in this system and trying to figure out ways and solutions here. And we got to use the tools that we have in front of us, or we end up back in courts where, I mean, almost every turn, just like the caller said, they're dead end. And we got to, at the right moment, be able to make the right decisions whenever the opportunity arises for us to do those things. And as long as people can see straight at those moments, political will can move things like this. And I think that's what you saw out of 2491. You know, but there was a lot of support to see that through. Something like the Kauai Rising Charter Amendment, which I full-heartedly wanted to support and see through.
Did you vote for that? Did you vote?
Yeah,
to...
well, it came to us a couple different times, right? And so initially when it came to us, we didn't have any opinion from our county attorney. And this all ends up legally, so we get our county attorney opinion. So we asked for it. It came back. We said this wasn't sound. What was being proposed wasn't sound. And with that information, I wasn't able to support it. And, you know, I had one more week. I went out and I interviewed as many people as I could. I wanted to get their feedback, and that's what this process is about. People telling us what they feel, what they see. I interviewed every commission member from the Ethics Commission, and they were also, you know, tied pretty much.
Right.
But when it came down to it, David, it was like, do I take away the power from the people and their process, or do I, you know, or do I just try and, you know, stop it? And I think the intent of a charter amendment is to allow the people a process, and I think that's what we want to try and support. Whether or not the council should be in it, I don't think we should be in there. I don't think we should be making a difference on the people's movement.
Okay, so you voted to allow it to go to the vote, to the ballot, or are you
ultimately yes, but we didn't have the vote.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So, well, let me ask you then about the county attorney, because it seems like he's got a lot of power on there, and he weighs in on everything. I've been to council meetings where, you know, somebody will bring up a great idea, and everybody looks at the county attorney and say, hey, can we do that? No, we can't. Okay,
yeah.
Well, let's try something else then. It's like, you know, yeah. Why is so much power in the county attorney's office then for everything?
You could look at the county attorney's bills for one, and that's one reason is, you know, we've got tons of legal bills because we make choices that go against that, the county attorney's best interest or their interest of or trying to keep the county safe. And then again, you know, it really depends. You could get a county attorney who's just, hey, our job is not to get us into a lawsuit. Or you could have a county attorney who is very progressive and trying to move us into trying to be really creative. So there's a lot of opinions. When it comes to it, Serena, it's always about, you know, how much you're going to put into everyone.
So we don't know, you know, when he's given an opinion, whether it's based, you know, entirely on, you know, legal interpretations, or if you know, if it's his opinion that, oh, you shouldn't be able to do that, or, you know, these companies are good to us, we should allow, you know, and may not be based on legal precedents.
Yeah. I mean, I can't speak for the county attorney. I think they do a good job in terms of looking at all the resources, past history. But when it comes down to it, you know, like the caller said, it's like, what proof do you need? Or, however, there is process for that, and I feel like we could still be at the table right now talking about solutions, but we're not because of the lawsuit.
Right.
Well, so.
Okay, maybe you can, you know, what do you think are some of the big issues facing Kauai now, and what would you do as a council person to address them?
Well,
a couple of examples.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, obviously the biggest thing that we're faced with is that this county is broke.
Broke financially?
Financially, yeah. We don't have what I would call a sustainable budget. You know, we don't have fees coming in that will run our government. We have expanded, and a large reason for us expanding is because of all of the charter movement amendments that have, over the years, that have created things like our boards and commissions and building more capacity. But it's also things like collective bargaining, unions that have, you know, negotiations that have gone maybe away from us in terms of supporting our budget. We've got a great director of finance, but we've got to come up with some solutions, and we've got to learn how to, you know, cut our costs in this time. One of the things I think that I come with is the ability to build some capacity and build some competency. I hear a lot of our leaders, you know, in office, the council, we talk about that our job is to manage the county, right, and manage the aspects of its operations. And it's true, management is about operations, about managing budget, but the missing factor is that you can't manage people. You know, you can manage things, but you can't manage people. You need to lead people, and that's an aspect that I believe I bring because of my experience and my knowledge. I spent a lot of time in this so that I can model it, and so I like, if people watch the show, because I call it a show. You see a lot of the politicking occurring. You see, and people are really good at it. We got to get through a lot of that. We got to get to really being clear about what are the most important priorities for us and stick to those agreements. And we got to model on the council floor what leadership is supposed to be like. I think that we can do this. We can do it in our department. And we're going to see people move further than they possibly can right now because, you know, when you are managing, you build a system of compliance, and that's what we have. We need people to do a lot more than that, and I think I can bring that.
Okay, so are there any programs you think that should be cut, you know, to save the money that we need to do?
Well, yes, there are a lot of things I think we should probably be looking at in terms of cutting. I wouldn't know where to start. I think that I'm not so much looking at that as much as looking at how to build capacity in what we're already doing. Certainly need to build capacity, and maybe it's capacity in our tax office. They do a great job, but they're not enabled with all the tools. You know, we're just talking about property taxes this coming week. We saw some proposals this past week that allude us to how it is we can assess things and not having the capability of doing it. You know, the things like the agronomic bill that's being proposed, wow, sounds like a great classification that councilman has put forth. but how do we actually do it successfully?
Create a class of property tax that gets us more revenue from the seed grower. Is that what you're talking about?
For research and not product. And
right.
I mean, there are
since they're not creating crops for our consumption now, they're making products to sell somewhere else. So they shouldn't get the tax breaks.
I mean, and then there's the timeshare. These are all great, you know, things that we should be looking at. But how do we, manage? How do we actually create the effective system so that we can enforce it? Because as you can see in planning, we're already struggling with that. So I don't think we need to take on anymore because we have. Certainly to answer your question, there's some areas that we've cut, you know, and like we had a presentation from the Solid Waste, they cut almost 600,000 from their, from overtime, you know, and that's what we want to see in every department.
Right. Hey, we've got another, we've got a call here. Two people actually lined up want to ask you some questions. So let's go to the phones. Hello, caller, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
You know, I wonder why the mayor deserves more money than an elementary school teacher. I mean, I don't know what he does to deserve, you know, what is it, 120 grand and an elementary school teacher makes 30 grand? I mean, I don't know. You know, also, when Teresa Tico and the Earth First attorneys offered free pro bono attorney work for the 249 bill, why didn't the city grab that opportunity to save themselves money? You know, and that blows my mind. And even though you mentioned something about things that were voted on that caused stress on the budget, you know, I mean, I forget what you mentioned these things were, you know, I mean, why weren't these things like challenged at the city council more? I mean, like the amend the bill that was just dumped just like that, like a cup of hot water, you know, by the city attorney.
Okay, let's let them respond now, then. We've got another call right behind you. Thanks for calling.
Okay, thanks.
All right, let's see. the first there was the mayor's salary. Is the mayor worth more than a kindergarten teacher or elementary school teacher? Or in general, are the salaries in line with what they should be, you know?
You know, I'm an educator, you know, I'm a facilitator of education. I think that's one of the most admirable jobs, and we've got to support them as much as we can. I think we're talking about two different.
Okay.
You know,
well, then, we'll simplify. Does the mayor deserve $120,000 a year? Is that what he gets?
You know, I'm not sure if it's $120,000. I thought it was a little bit less than that. I know there were some areas that went down this past year when we're looking at the budget in February. But I think that it may not be accurate.
Now a lot of
whether or not.
Oh, go ahead.
No, you know whether or not it's. I mean, it's an important job for sure. I mean, I can't answer if you should be paying.
Now, did a lot of the department heads got raises this year, didn't they? I think I read that. Is that prudent?
The police and the fire, you know, because of collective bargaining, had raises that were, you know, secured for them, but just went into play, and it's going to come into play for the next 2 years, actually.
Okay.
So we're going to continue to see that play out in terms of races.
Okay, then how about the question about Terry Tico and Earth Justice offering free legal services and the county turning them down? Is that true? Did that happen?
Well, it is kind of true, actually, in a way. They said they wanted help. And one of the, I guess, procurement rules is that if they do it pro bono, it's got to be absolutely free. We can't pay for anything. That's what I was told from the procurement office.
But they wanted some compensation?
Well, you know, talk about printing or some travel, you know, some expenses such as that. And that wasn't part of it. They weren't qualified.
So you couldn't take it.
Now they, yeah, well, that's what I was told. And they went through the process with the, you know, there was a procurement team, you know, people who reviewed it, and basically they came back and said these people are not qualified to do it. Now, you know, it was out of our, the council's purview to make a difference on that. And do we need a procurement process that's easier? Absolutely. You know, and people need to know that some of this is stuck in our state legislative system that we need to look for change.
Okay. Well, I think that's it for that caller. But we do have another call. Let's go to that caller. Hello, caller.
Hello.
You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, Mason, I'm, you know, I supported you, and I'm going to continue to do it. But I have concerns.
You.
The first one, I have two questions.
Okay.
Is what about the fees on trash? You know,
yeah.
We're already having a difficult time, working class people. You know, and, you know, property tax increases and trash fee increases.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of us don't like that. And then I wanted to get your opinion on that. And number two, what are our chances in court, if you
mm-hmm.
understand what's happening, on having, you know, Bill 960 passed?
Mm-hmm.
What are our chances? What do you think is going to happen?
Can you, I'll just answer it from the last question first.
Okay, sure.
I'm only going to tell you what I've heard.
Yes.
Some people who showed up for the hearing
yes.
have responded really favorably. And it looked, you know, I mean, we did a really good job.
Okay.
It looked promising. You know, that's as much as I know.
Okay.
And the magistrate hopefully will see that, you know, we need some relief. We need some
yes.
directive, and that he allows us to help people.
Okay. Oh, yeah, there's another question I have along with that one, too. Now, say, for example, we win it in court. Will there be an attempt by some within the council to try to overturn that?
Okay, you know what? You broke up a little bit. Can you repeat again?
Okay, now, say, for example, we win in court. Okay, will there be some of the council people who are going to try to reverse that?
Reverse the outcome?
Yes, reverse the outcome of 960 and we try to reject it. On the part of, say, like Roscagawa and what do you call that now? Mel Raposo. And if they get Harold Kaneshiro, I know he's on their side on this being that he's connected with Grove Farm.
Right.
I think there's going to be a very militant attempt on their part to try to overturn 960.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
I'll tell you what I've learned so far, 7 months
yes.
on the council, is anything is possible.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a new council who
mm-hmm.
has a new agenda and has
mm-hmm.
votes to support it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it could move in a different direction. I still think that the work that has happened in putting, you know, the bill into form and this particular process that we're going through with the lawsuit can make a big difference that will make it very solid and very difficult for us to turn back.
Okay. All right, thank you. Now, what about the other question?
Oh,
the,
when you talk about, you know, garbage, I know you must be talking about yesterday's meeting.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
Talked about pay as you throw.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, certainly, I don't know if you understand that actually, you know, if you downgrade to the smaller trash receptacle, I think it's a 64,
mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to pay the same amount that you're
mm-hmm.
currently paying. And
okay.
So that's a good thing. It's not increasing necessarily. I know for me, I don't need the big one, you know, and I got a family of four here.
Mm-hmm.
But we think it's like looking the big picture, you know, in the long run, we got to start taking care of our trash better.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about mind shift as well. Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, Americans are just very wasteful. we are wasteful. So I'm not an advocate of raising any fees, and I think that the encouragement here is, okay, everybody, let's start to recycle, because the only way you're being incentivized to do so is by money.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think it's an actual good move to get us there. I think that what I would like to see is that the MRF was DRA'd and that we could have a recycle bin so that it would make it easy for people to recycle, because, you know, as some people are concerned about, you know, if they might start illegally dumping, the research doesn't support that. It says that people in general respond by starting to recycle. So it's about shifting our habit.
Okay, thank you, Mason.
Okay, aloha.
Bye-bye.
Okay, phone lines are open. If anybody has another question for Mason Chalk, candidate or currently on the county council and candidate for a repeat performance there. So let's see, in terms of some of the important issues for the county then, you say the budget was one because you said we're broke. What do you see in the future for that? I mean, our revenue, I'm not even really sure why we have a shortfall at this point, because we seem to be doing okay for a while and had a nice surplus going. The surplus is nearly gone. Our credit rating was dropped. And where did the shortfall come from, and will it continue? Is it just a temporary thing, or are we going to be having this problem for a while now?
I mean, good question. I think it's going to take, in my opinion, a good plan. And I was really surprised that we don't have a budget plan. You know, it's like every business has a plan in order to be effective and successful. And so, I don't know if I have all the answers right now. In fact, I know I don't. I think it's going to take a lot of, brain power and bringing people together with their ideas and being creative. But certainly that plan needs to be put together now and acted on immediately. And in the meantime, what you can see is, you know, a lot of these efforts in trying to get some of our funds together. You know, I think we keep hearing council people talk about the fact that the PAT hasn't been restored, and this was a big, big, big thing for our county.
Right, so we got a percentage of it, is that all?
Right.
How much percentage?
Well, ended up, you know, what we could amount to is $10 million. So
that's what we would normally get?
Yeah, but we if we're looking at collectively, I mean, our community, we should be getting a lot more. And that really hurt us. I mean, it hurt us to the point where, you know, we're scrambling and realizing, you know, in some ways, when we're faced with adversity, you know, I think it's a good thing, because it makes us dig deeper and figure out some solutions. And when I step back at the situation, I think, well, you know, we just got to look at each department and make sure that we're, for our own island, if we're talking about things like home rule and being our own county and sustainable on our own, then we just look at our own services and our own expenses, and we act accordingly. So we only expend, you know, what we can bring in.
Right, but the TAT is something that affects our costs, because all those people visiting us, you know, cost us money, you know, in
absolutely
goods and services, or services and infrastructure. And then, you know, the state decides, like, year to year, oh, how much do we want to give them? You know, it's hard to budget according to a schedule like that, when they say, oh, in year, oh, we'll give you your full amount, or next year we'll give you half, or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
It's kind of difficult to budget around that.
Oh, yeah, don't get me wrong. We have to fight for this. We need our state legislators, representatives.
Seems like it should be in the law that, you know, we get our share of that money, you know, every year, and not have to wait for a handout from them.
Right. And, you know, yesterday's conversation was about, you know, us coming together unified. And in my opinion, all of our islands, it's affecting all of the outer islands, coming together, all the city and counties, coming together and saying, from our state representatives down to our councils, down to our mayors, down to our council chairs, all coming together and being unified around, no, this is what we need. This is what's important. because we come in every year to the legislative session with a package, but it's very difficult for all of us to agree upon what it is we want. And if we can agree that this is number one, I think that we have a much better chance this year. And it started to happen last year, and we did make some movement on it, but we got to be stronger this year.
Right. Okay, very good. Well, we're just have a few minutes left in the show here, so we're not going to be able to take any more calls. But if you want to give out some contact information, if you want, you know, tell us a little bit more about your candidacy, how people can help out, get a hold of you, here's your opportunity.
Well, I appreciate it. And I, you know, one of the callers talked about, you know, they're not sure about how I view things, and you know, I want to just go back to my values. And it's in light, and you can come look at it on my website, because I'm really clear about what's important. But I'm always objective, because you got to look at the silver linings, you got to look underneath what's happening, and come up with the best solutions. And that is only going to be, according to my kupuna, all of us moving forward together, not some of us, or not one side or the other, all of us together. And so that's what I'm about. I think that we can do this, and if anywhere, Hawaii, we can do it. And I think that Hawaii can be an example to the other islands and the rest of the world about aloha. So if you want to learn more about what I'm about, you know, what I represent, I have a website, Mason for Kauai. That's the number 4, Kauai, .org. Feel free to call me, 651-7013, or email me, Mason for Kauai, the number 4, at gmail.com. And, you know, no matter what happens in this election, number 10 has never made number 7, you guys. But I'm going to do my very best to get out there and try and get back there to do some work. But I'm committed, no matter what, for the rest of my life, to serve this island in building capacity and competency through leadership development.
All right. Well, thank you very much for calling in and talking with us today. And good luck on your election.
Okay, mahalo.
Okay, aloha. Okay, well, that's it for the show. I also want to put out a call to any other candidates for any of the offices, anywhere for that matter. You want to call into the show and talk with us and tell us what you're about, ask people for their vote. You're welcome to do so. I invited Mason Chaka on here myself, but others have been on other shows, and we try to give everybody the opportunity to be on the show here. So. Well, thank you for everybody, all the calls. Terry Lilly for coming in and telling us about the poor condition of the reefs. Not a lot of great news there, but there's hope in that, you know, we can get the word out and be a beacon for improvements in the quality of the reefs around the world. So I'll be back in a couple of weeks. Hopefully Jonathan will be back by then if he doesn't decide to stay over in Europe. Which I can't blame him for, but, you know, you got to come back to Kauai, right? So, see you in 2 weeks. Aloha.